I'm going to read text from 1 John today. 1 John 4, chapter 4, verses 16 through 18. And I'm reading from a relatively new Bible called the Inclusive Bible. I highly recommend it. We have come to know and to believe in the love God has for us. God is love, and those who abide in love abide in God, and God in them. Love will come to perfection in us when we can face the day of judgment without fear, because our relationship to this world is just like Christ. There is no fear in love, for perfect love drives out fear. To fear is to expect punishment, and anyone who is afraid is still imperfect in love. My message today is entitled, Being Lovingly Bold, Not Fearful. So, from time to time, various folks, some folks from the church even, where I serve, the church where I serve, they tell me that, well, that I'm not very good at tooting my own horn, and I gotta admit that that's probably very true. So today I'd like to talk a little bit about me. Not because I'm narcissistic or anything, although I think most of us are a little bit, but because I think it will end up being important in terms of the topic that I want to talk about. It's also sort of forcing me out of a comfort zone, and in some ways, today's message is ultimately about that as well. So, a big part of why I am at Presbyterian Church of the Covenant is because I am what my kids used to call Facebook famous. Now, that should not be confused with actually being famous. I mean, look at me. This is not the famous type. For that matter, just the way that my kids used to say it, like, yeah, you're Facebook famous. It makes it really clear that I shouldn't get a big head about it. Because of my social media presence, I was actually contacted by some of the folks at the Church of the Covenant and to see if I might be interested in working with them. Now, you know, about 10 years ago, there's no way anybody would have, well, reached out to me and invited me to participate in their spiritual community or event. I mean, at that point, I was serving a somewhat conservative church and was even having problems just getting a few of the members to attend on a consistent basis. Now, compare that to now. I've written for Huffington Post, Time.com, Bishop Spahn's newsletter. My blog was named once, it was named in the top 10 progressive must-read progressive Christian blogs. I've been featured on NPR and PBS shows. I won a national award for an article I wrote called War on Christmas. I was invited by the Church World Services to be a part of their D.C. Summit on Immigration. I'm a co-founder of the Christian Left. I'm president of ProgressiveChristianity.org. And a few years back, I was even the lead minister for South Carolina's Gay Pride Weekend. Now, it sounds like I'm bragging. And, well, like I said, I think we're all a bit narcissistic. So maybe I am a bit. But my real purpose, my real purpose is to establish that something changed for me 10-ish years ago, and what that was is what, well, it's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about it because I believe that everyone listening probably has something which they are passionate about. I suspect that each person has at least one thing, one topic, one issue about which they would like to make a difference. to affect change, to make things better. And as we look around the world today, we have to admit we need people making change for the better. So ultimately my hope is that some of you might be encouraged by my story, and a few more voices will be added to this progressive movement for change, for positive change. So let's jump back to 10 years ago. I was writing a blog, and basically, other than myself, nobody cared. And looking back on it, you know, no one really should have cared. But that all changed. That all changed one day with a single blog post. And it's honestly been pretty nonstop since then. That one day, I was sitting in my office at that small, somewhat conservative church, and I'm reading news. And I'm seeing news about Terry Jones. I don't know if you remember him. I called him KBM, the Quran Burning Man. He's the minister out of Florida that, well, had decided that he was going to get together a bunch of Qurans and burn them. And as I watched the news, I was getting frustrated with the fact that there weren't Christian ministers standing up and speaking out about it, at least not in a way that I was seeing. So I kind of got frustrated and thought to myself, I don't want to do this ministry thing if I can't be who I really am, if I can't speak about the things I really care about. So I went over to my bookshelf and pulled out the first Bible that I had ever been given. It had stayed with me my whole life, and it was a bit worn. And I wrote a letter to Pastor Jones and said, if you're going to burn the Abrahamic text or the text of my Abrahamic brothers and sisters, I want you to burn this one. And I explained why it was such an important text to me. I wrote a little tweet about it and a blog post to go along with it. And it kind of exploded. And folks, I started sending in their Bible. And I even heard various stories. One great story was a person in Atlanta, I believe it was, whose brother had converted Islam to Christianity. And the Bible that she gave him, which was very important to him, he sent in with his story to Terry. Long story short, for whatever reason, Pastor Jones never burned those Qurans, and there's actually another story that I can tell sometime about the next attempt that he made. But the real point here is that something changed. So what was it? What changed where I went from a minister just trying to keep a small conservative church running and going okay, to someone who was having their thoughts and ideas shared across the nation? Well, for me, what changed was much more than an increase in my the readership of my blog, and that happened. But for me, the most important thing that changed was me. I stopped being afraid. Fear is a killer. Fear limits us and constrains us. Fear controls us. It prevents us from doing the right thing, and it convinces us to do the reasonable thing, to not rock the boat. Now, it's important to say at this point that while being less afraid is good, being less afraid without compassion, that's likely to just turn you into a bigger bully. And being less afraid without a little thought and reflection, well, it typically is just going to turn you into a bull in a china shop. What I'm talking about is the ability to be less afraid of what will happen to you, what people will think of you, how they might shun you or make fun of you. I'm talking about being less afraid of those things for the sake of something that you are passionate about. And like I said, I believe everyone is passionate about something and would like to positively affect change about that thing. I'll give you another example of what that looks like in terms of setting aside your fears and thoughtfully, compassionately trying to affect change. I wonder if anyone still remembers the name Pastor Charles Worley. Some may, most probably don't. Pastor Charles Worley was a North Carolina minister like myself who had a YouTube sermon kind of go viral. In it, he had figured out the best way to handle these gay folks. He wanted to build these giant fenced-in areas and put all the gay folks in these two fenced-in areas, put the gay guys in one, lesbians in another, because his thinking was to do that, they won't reproduce and make more gay kids. I'll let you take that and think that through. And they would just drop food to them and stuff. And so, once again, it was one of those cases where I wasn't seeing many ministers speak up, particularly here in the South, particularly here in North Carolina. So I decided I was going to respond in this some way. And I wrote an article called The Wickedly Beautiful Response, or I think it was something close to that. The whole idea was we listed in that article a whole lot of LGBTQ advocacy groups. And then I asked everyone to, if they were passionate about this, to make a donation to the advocacy group in Pastor Charles Worley's name with the church address on it, which meant that he started getting mailings from all of these groups that would contain educational information, which clearly from the way he was thinking about separating the groups, some educational information was needed for him. In the end, I talked to several of the organizations that we were trying to raise money for. We raised well over $100,000 for them and lots of material being sent to Pastor Worley. Now, for me, the most important part of what we did was, well, the spirit in which it was done. We didn't try to bring harm to him or shut his church down. We responded to hate speech with playful love. We took something negative and bad and used it to energize something good. And it was just bonus points that he received so much educational material about LGBTQ equality. I think that that kind of response, I think of it as creative nonviolent resistance. Recently, deceased civil rights leader, Representative John Lewis, he called it making good trouble, which I really like that turn of phrase. Too frequently, we think the only possible response to hate is to return the hate or to sort of be a pacifist in that we are nice and either ignore it or do very little to confront it. And I think that the example that Jesus set for us is something somewhere in the middle of those two responses. And it's what I described in both of my stories about KDM and Pastor Worley. It's creative, nonviolent resistance. It actually is the same operating principle that people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King worked from. Now, admittedly, what we did was nowhere on the same scale as what they did. But the important thing to remember, is when we approach hate this way, we do so in the footsteps of giants. And I think that's important. Confronting hate can feel like a very dangerous thing to do. You'll get negative reactions from all sides. The people who agree with the person or the group that you're confronting will do everything they can to shut you down. Personally, I've actually received legitimate death threats because of it. And at the same time, even the people who are, you know, on your side, well, they might become a bit uncomfortable with the tension that you are creating and would tell you not to rock the boat, that you're going to bring too much attention to yourself, and, well, a whole list of other subtle pressures to try to get you to stop. And that's part of why it's so important to remember that confronting hate in this way has worked over and over again for some of the most iconic people in the world when it comes to affecting positive change. I think that leaves me with the question, why is that kind of thing led to people actually paying attention to what I have to say? Now, admittedly, I can't say that I completely understand it, but I can tell you what I think it is. It seems to me that this thing of being passionate about something and wanting to affect change and being willing to be creative and thoughtful about how you do it and not being afraid of all the social pressures that collude to stop you, seems to me that seems to be something that doesn't happen a lot. And because of that, it tends to catch people's attention when it does happen. Now, why I think all of this is important is because of a thought that I had one summer about 9 years ago. I was having lunch with a progressive Christian writer and theologian, Diana Butler Bass, and a couple of other folks in a restaurant downtown here in Greensboro. And someone said, "What we need is another Martin Luther King." To which I pretty quickly replied, in the age of social media and networking, I don't think that one single person is going to be the next MLK. I think the next MLK is all of us." And Diana immediately chimed in and saying that she thought that was probably right. And being a giant fan of hers, I began promoting that perspective ever since. What we need now, boy, what we need now are a bunch of people who are willing to be passionate about something and want to affect change and are willing to be creative and thoughtful about how they go about confronting hate and who won't be afraid of the social pressures that can collude to stop. And we need people who don't do it just once or every now and then, but people who will do it over and over and over again. So I'd like to conclude by simply asking you to consider if you might be able to do that. If you might be willing to become one of the voices that collectively are the next Dr. King, because if we ever hope to improve on issues like LGBTQ, equality, racism, greater inclusiveness between religions, voting rights, hunger, homelessness, this can go on and on. If we ever hope to move issues of justice and equality forward, is going to take every voice that we can gather. And it is my hope. It's my hope that some of you will choose to be a part of it. Let us pray. Good and gracious God, in a world of division, where anger and aggression are all too frequently the go-to solutions, may we turn to the great teachers of this world, those who over and over again called us to turn from violence, to turn from hatred, to turn from aggression, and to take the far more difficult but rewarding task of loving even our enemies. Each time we turn to love, may we see more clearly how the outcomes create a better world. And as we practice being a reflection of the people the teachings of Jesus calls us to be, may we recognize that it is not just some idealistic pie-in-the-sky vision of how we should be, but it is founded firmly in the knowledge of not only how the world works, but of what the world can be. And may we continue to work towards that time when we love each other so much that we each are truly cared for. Amen.